Welcome to My Opening Line. I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
My Opening Line, you know this show. It's where we talk to your favorite artists and what got them started in art and why, God, why did they keep going? First, let me tell you this. Big Keith and the Girl news. Our 24-hour marathon is coming up. We'll also be approaching 15 years in podcasting.
Is that a thing? That's crazy.
Please take a look if you want to support at keithandthegirl.com/kick, K-I-C-K. It's a very big deal.
keithandthegirl.com/kick.
Today's guest, well, it's a Keith and the Girl favorite, I'll tell you that. Featured in the New York Times, the LA Times, Huffington Post. Featured on Comedy Central. A correspondent for Redacted Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, John F. O'Donnell.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Congratulations, almost 15 years. It's exciting.
It's exciting.
You've been here for most of it, right?
Yeah. I have. Yeah, I was part of like the first, second wave of guests.
Yeah, for sure.
When you guys would only have on a select amount of people. Now it's just everybody.
Yeah. Well, thanks to you and people like you, we are the most prolific podcast. No podcast has more episodes than Keith and the Girl. How exciting is that?
That's amazing.
So thank you. But I do want to know, where did John begin his journey into comedy, shall we?
Ooh.
Okay, now did you always know you wanted to be a comedian, or did you just like attention?
I think it's a combination of those things. I think that I always, as when I was young, I liked to be the center of attention. But more than that, I learned that I really liked the way that it felt to make people laugh.
Okay.
And then as I started to get a little bit older and, you know, life started to kick me in the teeth a little bit or whatever, right. I found that comedy was a good thing to process that. So if you put both of those things together, it's what I wanted to do. And from being really young, I always knew that it's what I wanted to do.
Did you know that stand-up comedy was a thing? Because I saw Eddie Murphy maybe when I was younger, but I didn't know it. I didn't know its timeline. I didn't know that you just kind of get on stage. I thought it was a show just like a sitcom. You know, it wasn't Eddie Murphy necessarily writing it. It was another show on TV that someone produced and wrote and found a character to do it.
What I remember is early on finding Robin Williams, old stand-up, and he was my favorite comedian when I was growing up and stuff like that.
And you're a fast talker. He's very manic.
Yeah. And it was like that stream of consciousness stuff, and yeah. I was good at that stream of consciousness stuff. I remember one time in like, middle school, this one teacher would ask if any student can just like go in front of the class and extemporaneously just sort of riff about something in a funny way.
How old were you?
I must have been maybe like 12 or 13 or something like that.
And how hungover was the teacher to not give a fuck?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
This is a terrible idea.
It is. But I remember his name. His name was Mr. Mellon.
Okay.
And it sounds made up, but it's right. Not. I went to school with Mr. Mellon.
You don't know him as a Canadian school.
Cousins to Goofy Grapes. Call back. All right, but, have you been listening, KATG? All right, but anyway, I remember I did that, and I remember I had to do something where I was the only Frosted Flake in the package that didn't have any sugar on it. And he would give you like a scenario and kids would try to do it and they'd be like, but I would just be like, blah, blah, you know what I mean? Right. And then, but I remember.
Are you riding a wave when you do that? Do you know what's coming?
I think it's just stream of consciousness. Okay. You know what I mean? Where you're thinking of it pretty fast and just saying it.
And you just had the balls, the kind of.
Yeah. Just the
confidence.
Yeah, just the reckless confidence.
did comedy have anything to do in school? Comedy is a big word, right, for when you're in school.
Yeah.
But did the art come to you because you were picked on or anything like that? I was bullied, and I definitely used it, looking back, as a defense mechanism. It definitely stopped getting picked on. But with that said, if I wasn't picked on, I wouldn't be a scientist.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't be working at SpaceX right now if you were like a cool jock or
right.
Yeah. Okay, well, first, real quick, I remember when I did that cornflakes thing, I said, this was like the third one or so I did, and I go, this is ridiculous, I don't even shoot me, I'm a fucking cornflake, I said, and the whole class like stopped because I dropped like an F-bomb, and I remember feeling incredibly like embarrassed and ashamed of it, and the teacher put like his hands in front of his mouth, like, whoa, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then I felt like shit until my friend like told me it was okay, but I just completely forgot about that story until right now. But to answer your question, when I was doing that stuff, I didn't really get picked on and bullied until high school. So I think I already wanted to do comedy before that. And then I think it became a defense mechanism. But yeah, it really is the sort of thing. It always, to me, it feels good to make people laugh. It's a great feeling.
I think I brought comedy into my life because I never really thought about it because I didn't think I want to be a stand-up comic or be in comedy. But I think it was more like, oh, I get to tell the truth if it's angled in comedy.
Oh, right. That's cool. So you were cognizant of that?
I don't think I was. I think I just, like, as you guys were talking about, I'm like, why did I get funny? You know? Yeah, and I think it was just... calling people out, but then they're laughing at me calling them out. So I got to get away with it and also just be like, oh, so you're just going to say that's going to come out of your face, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, you will figure it out. You will get funny. It's funny to say that because you are funny. So it was like Robin Williams. And also I was into those Cosby records. Mm-hmm. It's just the truth. But, you know, but I've actually found his later stuff considerably better.
I consider his latest stuff horrible.
Exactly. I was kidding. It's tragic. So I think Robin Williams was really influential for me. And then I saw those Eddie Murphy specials early on. I thought it was so, so funny.
Did you see Cosby's latest tour, by the way? Because seriously, no. He put one out on Amazon as he was being indicted. That's balls. It's called I'm Still Here, like laughing at us.
Oh, God, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm curious.
That's terrible.
It's too bad because you can't change history and be like, you know, oh, yeah, I never liked Cosby.
Right.
It was part of it.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I was just living in D.C. and Ben's Chili Bowl, this very famous place in D.C., there's so many pictures of Cosby in there.
Oh, wow. So.
And they haven't gotten rid of all the ones inside, but he was the big, like, mural on the outside. It was him and Barack and Michelle Obama. Forever. They held on, you know. And
what's funny
they got rid of him and replaced him with Prince.
Good. What's that's good.
It's
choice.
True.
It's funny when psychopaths have opinions. Like I picture you know, like you have OJ Simpson, he's on Twitter now and he's like, let me tell you about my fantasy football picks. And it's like, what? Multiple killer?
Or that book you wrote of how I would have done it.
Right. Yeah. And I picture Cosby in jail and he's like, you know what? It's true. Yeah, comedy's taking a bad hit and you can't just do what you want nowadays. You know, and somebody in jail was like, I'm a murderer. Fuck you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. PC culture, run amok.
It's not even close.
Well, I can't drug 60 women.
At what age do you decide I'm going to go on stage like an adult and tell jokes in front of strangers?
Well, I kind of buried the lead because the first time I did stand up for real, I was on vacation and I was 12 years old in Jamaica.
All right.
Which does not directly tie in any way I figured out to my recurring Rastafari Messiah delusion. but somehow I've never drawn a straight line to it. For those of you who are familiar, KATG,
I'm nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been through some shit. All right. But intermittently nuts, Keith.
Sorry.
I have narrative distance to be able to talk about it. You know what I mean? Like my insanity demons are like, you're going to need more material.
Yeah. You have a raiding crew up there.
Yeah.
Your noggin.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
So you're in sixth grade and you're performing in Jamaica.
It was either sixth or seventh grade. And we went on vacation. I remember my mother and my brother and me to Jamaica. We stayed at a timeshare called Club Caribbean, which I remember it was a 2-star. like timeshare place.
And back then they still went 4 or 5 stars, right?
Oh yeah.
They didn't do 2 stars.
No, yeah. It's not
like Michelin stars.
Right.
No. It was 2 dwindling stars. Like where the band Blues Traveler's at now, I guess. You know what
Were
I mean?
You there with your family?
Yeah, I was just there with my mother and my brother and a family friend.
Okay.
We stayed like the places we were staying in, there was a pool and stuff and a bar and everything, but we were staying in sort of like huts with thatch roof type style thing. And a lot of people that were there were Europeans who don't care about as much about sort of luxurious accommodations as Americans and stuff.
Was it
like that.
Sort of like a hostel, but in Jamaica? Is it like, hey, you get to be in Jamaica, who cares where you are?
No, it wasn't that bad. It was 2 stars. You know what I mean? I mean, it was comfortable enough, and there was a pool and, you know, food and tennis courts and stuff like
that. Was there a show going on?
there was a talent show at the end of like the people's time there at the end of the week or something
Wow, talk about lazy for the resort. Hire someone. Hey, children, want to show?
Not children, everyone. Aww. You know what I mean? But it's like, today's show. Guests.
Yeah, today's show is you. And if you want other shows, put something together. That's the beauty of Jamaica.
2 stars.
Right.
Yeah, it is a very 2-star move. So during this thing, throughout the week, there was really nobody. Well, I guess there was only one person that was kind of my age, this kid Brandon from Canada. And so I was hanging out with him. He was a little bit younger than me. And then there was an 18-year-old kid from New York named Pat who had nobody to hang out with. Like, so he ended up hanging out with me and Brandon and stuff like that.
Oh, God, he's talking about this on a podcast too, but it sounds different.
No, it's not. It wasn't. No. Oh, you think it's going to be like a...
No. Oh. I'm just saying from an 18-year-old perspective that... Like, from a 12-year-old perspective, this 18-year-old had to hang out with you. From an 18-year-old perspective, why did anyone bring me here?
Yeah. It was kind of like that. And he was a nice person. He was cool. And then, so it got into all of our heads that I was going to do stand-up at this talent show for some reason. I wanted to do it. I think it's something I always wanted to do. And so the Canadian kid's father... who was kind of like a, you know, character of sorts, him and Pat, the 18-year-old, they wrote all the material for me.
Wow.
So this is the only time in my life ever since then that I've ever had anybody write material for me.
Were you in on the writing session?
I was there, but they wrote the jokes.
Okay.
And it's like really, some of it's really, really bad. Like I'll tell you some of it in a minute, but this is what it was. I remember trying to memorize it and stuff like that. And during rehearsal, kind of being like, you know, stumbling over the words and stuff like that. But then, you know, when I hit the stage or, you know, stood next to the pool where everybody.
Don't run.
Yeah.
And safety first at a gingerly pace. Here's your next performer.
Well, when I started performing, I was like, playing off the energy, and it went really well. And I can't remember all of the jokes, but I do remember the first thing that I said.
Okay.
Was I go like, hey, everybody, I paid all the bartenders an extra $5 to make your drinks extra strong, so maybe you'll laugh at some of my jokes. And I was like, oh, God.
You know, that's cute, but like a 12-year-old.
Like
that's
12-year-old. Cute. Yeah. And then the only jokes I can remember, there's like three of them, and one of them was like, just mean to my mom. I was mm-hmm. like, yeah, my mom, she's so dumb.
Tell her.
Since we've been here, she's been trying to get a picture, like a close-up picture of the horizon. You can't get one of those. You know what I mean?
Right.
Did you know what that meant, what you were saying?
I kind of knew what that meant, I guess. You know what I mean? Then another one was like, because there was some like sort of thing for people to see where there was like a Mercedes in the water, you know what I mean? You could take this sort of boat out and had a clear bottom so you could see it, right? So I made some joke about people not being able to drive, but here's...
You got cars in the
pools. Yeah, something like that. And then I said something about mean-spirited about people eating fast food in some capacity. I don't know, but this is the one that I can't forget, and it's so fucked up. And everybody laughed, and it was like, hey, I made one of the worst mistakes of my... life the other day. I asked a local to smile at night. I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah, some racist thing about like, wait, how did it go? It was like,
I think we get it.
I don't think you want to.
We're
cool.
But everybody laughed there. You know what I mean? And it was something. But it was bad. But if I'm going to tell the bad racist joke, I have to get it right.
No.
You know what I mean? Okay. But it was something about black people had to smile or else they disappear at night or something fucked up. You know what I mean? Like a classic old school throwback racist joke.
It'd be funny if we really didn't get it.
Yeah.
It's like, with the teeth.
Yeah. And then I had like a pratfall thing where the Canadian kid, was supposed to like come up and like say something, and then I pushed him into the pool. So that was part of it. We did that, and
that's cool.
There was a top. I'm just remembering now. There was a top 10 list, like David Letterman style, And then it was like top 10 reasons to come to Club Caribbean. And then number two was like to learn to speak German because so many German people were staying there. Okay. So that was kind of funny.
They're pretty good for like a dad and random 18-year-old team.
Yeah. And I won the talent show.
Oh, yeah?
That's absolutely true. And the prize was a bottle of rum and they wouldn't give it to me. Because I was a kid.
They had no other plans.
I bet you made at least one person so sad. Like some woman come out for like Stella got her groove, like getting her groove back. And it's like, you know what? I'm going to go for it.
Right. Did they really not give you anything? Like maybe the Coke that goes with the rum?
I remember not getting anything.
Sorry.
Yeah, and that poor woman's like, this racist kid got the fucking one.
The judges are drinking the rum. Nothing we can do.
But yeah, but I won, and then I was like, that's all I need.
Right. Did you know this is going to be my career now, and school's a joke?
I don't know. I think I still, part of me was like, I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a lawyer. My dad's a lawyer or something like that.
Right. Do you tell the kids at school what a celebrity you were?
No, I don't remember. I don't think so. But I think I was always funny in middle school. And then I got to high school and I moved to a different place for high school. And for a little while, I was cool for like a few months somehow.
Okay.
Like I wore a hat instead of Dr. Nice. Pepper. It said Dr. Pecker on it.
Oh, nice. You know what I mean?
It looked like the Dr. Pepper one, right. Which is pretty cool. But then it started to churn really fast. I remember we went to a concert and then I met a girl there. And we kissed a little bit, and then I was kind of like happy or excited about it. And then the next day, everybody like that I thought I was cool with was saying that she was fat or whatever. And she wasn't fat. If anything, she was skinny. Even though if she was fat, we shouldn't body shame, but we were fucking high school freshmen. You know what I mean? We're monsters.
Sure. Why did I have to get a lesson?
Yeah.
I didn't say nothing.
Yeah. But anyway, I was like, why are you guys saying that? And then I got really angry. And then they found out that if they made fun of me at all, I would get really angry. So then it just became a disaster.
At what age do you say, hey, I'm going to do stand up as an adult? And quite frankly, I'm good at this. I'm a winner, and I'm Jamaica's. I'm probably on all their walls and shit.
On their brochures at this point.
All the two-star. I just did all the two-star resorts after that. let's see. So then,
were you 18, older, younger?
I think I was 19. So after that, I didn't do it again until
where
I was 19.
Where were you living?
I was between. I was living in New Jersey, but I was also in college in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and then I was doing open mics in New York. So the first shows that I did were open mics in New York, and. It's something when I first got to college my freshman year that I was like, okay, I think I want to do this and try to figure that out. Then cut to sophomore year, first semester of sophomore year is when I had my first manic episode. And it was, you know, it was a whirlwind. It was messed up and it was really intense and ultimately very painful. And
have you ever had been in the middle of
manic episode.
The manic episode is actually happening, not, you know, ramping up. It's happening, and you perform stand-up. Has that ever happened?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you black out? Do you know what you're saying?
No, I don't.
Did you
tape
it?
I think there was some tape of something of me in Belfast, but it's been erased or whatever. But no, it's
who
weird.
Who erased it? The CIA?
No, some... A girl that I met.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. Okay. Who worked for the CIA?
But. I assume.
Wait, but sophomore year, is that how you found out you have manic depression?
Yeah.
From the first, you weren't depressed before that? It started with mania?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Which is kind of what bipolar 1 disorder can be. But okay, there's two questions going on here. So what was your question, Keith?
My question was about the very first time you performed.
Okay,
you knew what you were doing.
Okay, no. Well, you're asking if I ever performed on stage manic.
Yes.
Yes, and it's a weird thing where sometimes it can be really interesting and funny because, you know, my mind is racing so quickly and I'm somehow putting something together that's funny or intense or something like that, but it's not consistent in any way. Other times it'll just be weird. And then... a lot of times I would do it and I'd end up like naked on stage and stuff like that. Like when I was performing in
Scotland. Do you get resentful that nobody called the police? That they're just enjoying it?
No, I mean, I don't blame them. But also, I don't want, it's like there's no good scenario where right. I don't want the police to be called.
Right. None of you say.
Keith is like, yeah. Are you upset that nobody called the police?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know.
Are you comfortable naked, or is that just the mania?
I think maybe more so in the past. I mean, I guess I would still be, but I'm not like looking to do it. You know what I mean? Mm. Like there's like, then I don't know if they still do it, but those naked shows yeah. and stuff, I've never really had a desire to do that.
Do you have do you get bigger hard-ons during the mania? Is it are you Mr. Hyde or something? You know, are you?
I don't think I physiologically
change.
Well, I mean, there is actually a weird physiological change in terms of like, maybe it's just psychological, but some sort of like sexual prowess or performance ability or something, which is so weird how it kind of transcends into like the physical realm. I don't know what that's about. But anyway, my first time on stage.
We're all looking into that anyway.
Yeah. So the reason I brought up that episode, right, was because, so then I ended up back at home, right? And I was really, really depressed and miserable and stuff like that. And finally, then that summer back in Jersey, I started exercising with a good friend of mine. And then I started going into the city and doing stand up. And that's what really helped me get out of depression.
Okay.
So that was the first time of many times moving forward that getting back in and doing stand up has been something that has helped me claw out of a depression, because it's created a sense of confidence for me. It's created a kind of sense of self-worth or something that I could work on and do well and stuff like that. So
I remember when yeah. I would be at this Lower East Side art house. That's where I met Hemda, Surf Reality. And I only did stand up once a week, but I loved it. I thought I was good at it. And I remember one day, and I was even recording it. Maybe I would do something with all these weekends. And one day I left the recorder at home. Hemda ran to my house, got the recorder. I wasn't really prepared. So my point is, I made this a big deal and I flopped and I felt like a big piece of shit. Now that your head can go even to stranger places than I do, will a bad show or a bad crowd take you to a weird place? I was embarrassed.
At this point?
At that point, I was, yeah.
Oh, you mean like...
I just had a bad show. I yeah. made it a big deal. My girlfriend at the time has to run to my house to record yeah. it. And then it's like, what did I just... She saw that. No, how's she going to want to fuck me again? You know?
Yeah, and you were a great girlfriend.
I never fucked him again.
And we broke up. So
over the recorder. Flopped.
It's ironic that we have a podcast now.
Yeah, that is actually true irony. Wait, you mean now? Do I feel like that?
Anytime.
Okay. I would say now, no. I would say some years ago, it would be more so of a, like, hard to kind of create some sort of sustained sense of confidence where there'd be somewhat of an element of I'd feel like I'm as good as my last set, but not now. Now it's just me wanting to put together exactly the next sort of a little kind of hour or body of work that I want to do. So okay. I'm just trying to keep working on that. It is weird though, because relatively speaking, to say like a few years ago when I was before Redacted, when I was really grinding away doing spots constantly, I still feel like I have a little bit of like some rust here and there. But it's interesting in the city, the sets that I'm doing now, because sometimes it's going really well where I'm really connected with the audience, but other times the same bits are just really like people are kind of just looking at me. So I'm trying to figure out and find that consistency with it.
Well, what I love about, I saw you perform recently and it was very funny, but I like how you want to practice some bit, but you don't want to tell the whole story because it's part of some hour show you're working on. So you're like, assume I was working on my own currency. Okay, that's a fact. So now I would have my goofy grapes and we're like, what the fuck?
Why? It's hard,
just
dude.
Just because you told us it does mean something doesn't mean we know it means something.
Well, you try to work out an hour show in 10-minute sets, especially when I'm like hosting. Yeah, that's the worst. Like I'm hosting, so I'm in between. I'm doing stuff where half the audience wasn't even there from the beginning. Right. But I try to
assume
make that
I just,
fun.
Assume I just got out of jail. Yeah. It wasn't too bad. It's not like I assaulted anybody, but it was a big deal. So anyway, that happened. Okay, now get this.
Yeah.
I'm going to do callbacks now.
Yeah, I'm going to do callbacks to things you haven't heard, and I'm going to be memorizing it, so it's going to be off. But also, I'm going to need you to laugh at all these beats.
Right, I can still take it personal.
I'm still taking it personal because it still hurts when you don't. Yeah, you guys told me I did the whole part about the whole IRA thing.
Yeah.
And I have that line that I love at the end where I go, Little known fact, the magenta bracelet leave behind is a classic piece of IRA spycraft.
Right, that you and put then, on the hotel door.
Yeah, put on the hotel door. And nobody laughed. And I was like, all right.
Your next
comic gets so fucked up. And then I'm like, you're not even getting the fractal geometry part. I'm, like, right. I'm not even going to tell you anyway, about the JFOD coin.
Anyway, good luck, Micah Fox. We'll get him.
Go ahead, Micah. Do your fucking rehearse shit.
But you end up getting a booking agent. And they end up sending you to all these different clubs to do stand up. Now you're like, hey, this could be a job.
Yeah. So the first shows I did were mics in New York, and I felt like they went well enough. Remember, the first mic I did was a place called the Indiglo Bar in the Upper West Side, I believe.
Okay.
And I somehow got enough laughs that I thought it went well, to the point where the next time when I went there, somebody came to the show to like see me. And then I didn't do so well. And then I left and I was like, it's all over. Right. You know what I mean? Sure. That's how you think. It's crazy. You're like, I had my chance and I blew it in front of who knows who the fuck that guy was. Right. You know what I mean? Then I ended up going back to Ann Arbor, back to college, University of Michigan. And that's where I kind of got my legs doing shows in Ann Arbor and outside of Detroit and all that stuff for the next number of years.
What were you taking in Michigan?
I studied screenwriting and playwriting.
Okay.
Yeah. But they, full disclosure, they disbanded that major before I could officially declare in it. So I ended up getting a general studies degree, but taking all of those same courses. But I tell people screenwriting and playwriting, I don't even know why at this point.
I bet you never just leave it at screenwriting and playwriting. You always have to say the backstory also.
No, I usually don't say the backstory. Oh, that was exclusive. Me being vulnerable. Because if you say general studies, you know what I mean? You're like, it sounds bad. Like you didn't do anything.
Sounds like you spent a lot of money on bowling.
Yeah. I generally studied, you know.
That's how I studied in high school.
Generally. So I did that. And then believe it or not, I went over to Ireland for my junior year of college. I studied abroad there and started doing stand-up over there. And I think I hit a new level and actually got funnier over there talking about how much Irish people hate Americans. But I wasn't doing the thing where I would just sort of shit on being American. I would kind of like call them out for how ridiculous it was while also being self-deprecatory.
Right.
And that gave me some like chops. And then I came back and I was funnier. And then I was, you know, there's a great club in Ann Arbor called the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. It's this independently run club that's been around since like the late 80s. And you'd get to do guest spots there. So that was a cool thing where, and sometimes the lineup would just be two comics. It would be the MC would also be the feature. And then there'd be the headliner. And if you were a comic who was doing the open mic a lot and were getting funnier, the manager Roger would put you on for a guest spot in between both of those comics to do like 10 or 12. So it was a real great like cherry spot to do. And that was a cool experience. And then somebody that was like a feature recommended that me to this big Midwestern booking agency called Funny Business.
And how old are you at that time?
At that time, I was probably, I'm going to say 21 or something.
Are you driving yourself to different shows?
Yeah.
How far apart are these shows?
I would do, I would say anywhere from sometimes, I guess 30 to 60, 70 miles, something like that.
Oh, that's not a lot.
I wasn't going like crazy. I was just doing, because it was hard to get spot still. So I got that, which was really cool because it was like, oh, wow, I'm a working comedian.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a professional comedian in some capacity. And the clubs that I would get to work are like these like C, D level clubs. A lot of them aren't even around anymore.
Right. And it stars? Or?
Yeah, they knew I came out of the two-star scene. So they were like, this is where you belong.
Does your agency make you dress up?
Well, this is what it was. Some of the clubs did. It wasn't necessarily the agency, but also it was so hard to get in touch with this agency. You would call so many times and no one would answer, but then you found out like, oh, you have to call at a certain time on Monday.
Right.
And then you'll get somebody and then he'll just give you a handful of dates.
He's hung over on Monday. He doesn't think. He picks up a phone.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but that was it. But a couple of clubs, one specifically, a club's not there anymore. It was just legendary for being run by this real skis ball of a gentleman. Like he would...
I like that you call him a gentleman.
Yeah, anyway. I thought it would be funny. But I mean, he's still a booker. No, I'm just kidding. But,
you never know. Shh.
I think he's dead. But it was a club called Chaplains. And he would make just the MCs wear a shirt and tie. Oh. And then nobody else had to.
Way to set the pace. All right.
And you'd have to be clean. You couldn't curse, but everybody else could just do whatever they wanted. I have no idea why. But he made the servers, like the women always wear essentially like French maid outfits type stuff. It was like a real
80s scene.
Throwback fucked up scene. And the crowds were terrible. And I would just go and like essentially bomb wherever I would go, because I'd be doing this like Ann Arbor, you know, alti, whatever I'm doing. And they're just like, who the fuck are you?
Did you already feel like you're in the biz for 20 years? You're like, this is what I do. Here's the omelet. Fuck you.
No, I moved well before that particular type of bitterness.
Okay, good.
I mean, other types of bitterness have come in, but not that one. That's the worst. Like those guys that feature or even headline out there and never leave. Some of them are sweethearts, but some other ones like stop writing for years and then are miserable about their acts and they're embittered and like talk shit about younger comics. And it's like, hey, you've just decided to stay static.
What would you get paid about for those spots?
Those would be...
You paid them. Just processing fee.
No. Yeah.
You understand the business.
It was bringers. Yeah. Yeah.
It'll all come back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exposure.
Right. Have you heard of Bill Cosby? Yeah. Oh,
God. When I said that joke earlier, it didn't land at all. And then I feel weird about it. When I said, like, I like his later work as a joke, like a dark joke, you guys were just like, Bill. Keith goes, that was horrifying. I was like, thanks, man.
It's my new character.
Yeah.
But do you think you guys got paid
$125 for five shows, not per show.
Okay.
Sometimes 150, I think. But this was back in like the relatively early 2000s.
Oh, 2000. I knew there was a two in there.
Yeah. This is maybe what, 2003?
Do comics get paid so little because it's your fault? Because
he likes to blame the victim.
Well, I'm just asking. They these club owners over here, you guys go, I love comedy. I do it for free. And they're like, okay. You can just pay me with a Coca-Cola. Done. Idiot. Yeah. You guys got to act like you have self-worth. No, you have to pay me to show up.
Yeah. You're like, yeah. Well, I get a PBR for doing this one. Yeah, that was my 20s doing comedy in the East Village.
Or like a place, instead of money, they offer you food and you make yourself sick because that's how you're getting paid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take two slices of cake.
I need allergic. The calories.
Because I'm not here till next week. No, you can't take it to go. So, okay, then I'll give me another fork.
I'll take it to go in my belly.
Right. Let me mention this, if I may, a little life hack for everybody. Mm. All right. Speaking of eating and your teeth, we got this letter from Michelle. Michelle says, my stepson, who is 7, just went to the dentist and came back with 8, yes, 8 cavities. We think he is just going to the bathroom and not taking the time to brush. Thankfully, which, by the way, kids are funny. You have to be in the bathroom anyway.
But the funniest thing is he probably like runs the water, goes through it, puts the toothpaste on, then takes it off.
Right.
And it takes the same amount of time, but he's like, well, I didn't brush my teeth.
Thankfully, the same week as his appointment, I heard your ad for the Tymed electronic toothbrush Quip. And I thought it was an excellent idea for him. That and being supervised now when he brushes. So I went to the site and they have kids' toothbrushes at the Quip website. Thanks so much for making my life easier and, as always, more entertaining. Much love, Michelle. I never thought I'd get a grown adult saying thank you for telling me about a toothbrush, but I have Quip and I love it too. I love it too. It's better than a regular toothbrush. It's electric, but it's not big and bulky like you would think. In fact, no joke, it looks cool and slim that I leave it out so company can see it.
I remember having an electric toothbrush and it went dead pretty fast. It just was messed up. And the head always kind of got dirty because the thing that it sits on wasn't really, I don't know, it didn't sit right anywhere. This is the size of a toothbrush. The battery, which it comes with, thank God, otherwise I would never get it.
Sure.
Battery, which it comes with, fits inside the same size as a toothbrush.
Right.
And it's affordable. I know, like, I didn't buy the second electric toothbrush for a long time because they're usually over $100.
They're $100 and you need like, you know, a wall outlet that can power.
Yes, the wall outlet thing was, I ran out of wall outlets. This is like right there. It just sits there. It comes with its own little package to just sit.
Then, of course, they mail you in, you know, little refills, refill brushes before you need them. Sensitive vibrations, built-in timer. So it goes, it's going, you know, and then all of a sudden, bzz, and that means, oh, new quadrant in my mouth. Bzz. I'm like a child. I'm 45. Ooh, ooh, time to change quadrants. I love it. I'm not joking. I love it. Quip starts at just $25, and you'll get your first refill free at getquip.com/MOL for my opening line.
It comes with toothpaste.
It's a simple way to support our show and start brushing better. But you have to go get quip.com. Getquip.com/MOL to get your first refill free. Go right now. Get Quip, Q-U-I-P, getquip.com/MOL.
For my opening line.
Thank you. But sometimes I get passionate. Okay?
Yeah, dude. Nice.
I mean, well, I got to tell you, you know.
Everybody likes to know when to switch quadrants.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I said, what is it? A guessing a happy birthday to you? Well, I don't know the tempo.
That's true. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I just moved into a new place. I'm pretty sure my roommate has it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is your roommate smart?
She's pretty smart.
Okay, well, there you have it.
I was like, what is this cool thing?
Right. Now, Comedy Central, let's jump to this.
Okay.
You end up making a little scene, and they go, we like this kid. Let's put him on some kind of New Faces thing we got on the TV.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm going to be on the TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was exciting.
Nerve-wracking?
No, I'll explain. Let me explain.
Please. That's how this will work.
Okay, cool. What I was just like, no. It was not nerve-wracking. Next question.
I am a pro.
I'm a pro. I know what I'm doing. So then I moved to New York, right? And I'm in New York, and I'm, you know, I'm grinding for some years, figuring stuff out, producing live shows here and there, doing different things, blah, 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 barking for stage time, all that. Cut to, I can't remember, maybe it was 2005 or 6. I don't know, 6? Let's say 6. I don't know. There was this campaign thing was called, Comedy Central's Fresh Faces of Comedy.
Okay.
So it was a tie-in with, like Subway sandwiches, like Eat Fresh, but okay. I've just let that part of it slide into obscurity years ago, because saying like, I was one of Comedy Central's Fresh Faces of Comedy sounds good and legit as a credit, but saying I was one of Comedy Central's Fresh Faces of Comedy as Subway Eat Fresh, you know what I mean? A corporate tie-in, a bullshit brigade.
Presented by the new Reuben 6-inch.
Yeah. For anybody listening at home, any credit that you can get or sort of get, if you can legitimize it in any way, honestly, the fucking industry and this whole thing is so fucked up. Just take it and run with it. And guess who told me that 1,000 years ago when I first started?
Comedy Central.
That's great. Doug Stanhope. But whatever. He did. Because actually, holy shit, I fucking forgot. One of the first shows I ever did was when I was part of this student group. We would bring comedians or musicians to campus at the University of Michigan. So we brought the Comedy Central No Class Comedy Tour, which was Doug Stanhope headlining, Ed Helms featuring,
okay,
and Christian Finnegan, our good pal, hosting.
Funny.
Yeah. And so they let me do time. So basically they let me do 5 minutes and then bring on Christian, and then they did the show. What was really funny is this Comedy Central No Class Tour only had about half a dozen shows before it got canceled, because so many people were like walking out on Doug Stanhope because he was like so raunchy at the time. And sometimes it would be like a parents' weekend, so it'd be filled up with like parents and stuff. So like hundreds of people walked out of the University of Michigan show.
Right.
But the one in Wisconsin the week before or something, like half the place walked out, and they ended up canceling the tour.
Doug Stanhope's talking about the beauty of drugs, and the parents are like, this is what we're paying for?
Yeah.
Fuck school. What?
Yeah. But I mean, he was talking about sodomy laws still being on the books in Texas, but in a very visceral way. I mean, his perspective was right, for sure.
By the way, speaking of credits, I know this comedian who wrote As Seen on TMZ, because Alec Baldwin's getting picked on and he happened to pass the camera.
No. All right. Maybe there's a limit to what I just said. Maybe that's where you... But I said to him, I was like, oh, can I say that, like, that I, you know, that I performed on the Comedy Central No Class? And he was just like, yeah, absolutely. He goes, say whatever the fuck you have
say
to.
Say you live with me. What do I give a shit? I'm not checking. I'm drunk half the time.
Yeah.
Half the time. Yeah, and the other half, too. What do I know? Maybe I opened for you.
Yeah. So anyway, so this Comedy Central No Class Tour thing. The Comedy Central Fresh Faces of Comedy. You'd get to tell one joke. You told one joke, but it wasn't like in front of a crowd. There was, it was sort of in a park or something like that. And then there would be a different sort of scene. So there were four comics.
It's so funny. A lot of producers think there needs to be like a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you're funny, but what if we throw you in a park?
Yeah. Right. What if we throw you in a park and then have you go on a school bus and throw paper at children, which actually is what happened. No. Yeah. Different people did different things. I remember it was the four that year was me, Al Jackson. Okay. You guys know Al, maybe? Cena John. And
John Cena, you think?
John Cena. Could you imagine? John Cena's like, I got my one joke. All right, get these kids away from me. And Eliza Faria Santos.
Okay.
Anyway, I just remembered that, so I thought I would let you guys know. All right.
He just starts doing tongue twisters.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I remember that my joke was like, it would be like up next, John F. O'Donnell. And then it would show me kind of doing the action thing where I was like on the bus, so they like rented a school bus, and I'm just like throwing these papers at these kids or whatever.
Okay.
And then it would come back. And my joke was like, it's something like, I like to buy refried beans, and then I'll refry them an additional 8 times, so they become refried beans. So when I hang out with my friend who stutters, he can feel normal, if only for a little while. So fucking dumb. Keith likes it.
I can't tell you why, but I love it. Let's not evaluate it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
But why were you throwing paper at children?
Because I'm fresh face. I'm up next in Subway, sandwiches.
Bus, kids.
Yeah. What were some of the other act outs?
Don't remember. Okay, one, I remember Cena John, because he's like, I think he's Persian. I'm not sure. But so he's like doing a joke about being hairy or something. I don't know.
And then his action shot was like, you know, old school TNT. He's pressing the thing down.
I don't know. Oh, and I think Al Jackson's was about how he was a teacher, but if they're playing a movie, it means he's hungover. He's drinking.
That's
or something.
That's just fact.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah. So then I kind of coasted as best I could off that Comedy Central Fresh Faces of Comedy credit, which is kind of crazy because, all right, it's fine, but I'm just going to be like, you know, honest, comedy is tough. There's a lot of, sometimes you get some stuff, but there's a lot of things you don't, right? Like, I have been in the mix and auditioned for a bunch of the more kind of showcase stuff and the half hour specials, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Montreal Comedy Festival, all. And I feel like I've done a good job, but I just haven't gotten any of it. And you have to figure out how to be like, okay, I can either get really embittered and angry about that, or feel bad about my comedy, or think I'm not good at comedy, or just realize that there's a lot of things that go into this. And, you know, I know what I'm doing. I like what I'm doing.
And there's also so many other avenues. I think it used to be you get Just for Laughs, the festival, new faces, and then you get the agent, and then you get the Comedy Central. And then, but now, you know, even with, like, especially with podcasting, when you first came on Keith and the Girl, it was over for our audience. They were madly in love with you. And, you know, you were putting out the DIY albums, and they were getting that. And
I should have started a podcast 10 years ago. But you're absolutely right. And thank goodness. Isn't that great? You know what I mean? Because it's so wonderful to be able to, you know, if you contribute something that's interesting and worthwhile, that you can build an audience and people that really connect with it and build a community.
Yeah, so you don't have to wait for somebody to give you permission to get the audience to do what you wanted to do anyway.
But what's funny now is that the powers that be know it's a DIY world, so they go, go ahead, DIY.
Yeah.
You get yourself an agent, then we'll be your agent.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Okay. That's true.
They're like, oh, you built this whole thing? Let me play off your sense of vanity and get 10% of that.
Right.
And,
you did it.
Give now, you a back massager sometime.
Now you work for me. Yeah. Right.
But it is funny, though, because it's like I'm very proud of being on Redacted Tonight. It's a TV show, right? But it was shot in DC. It's on a network that not everybody knows or whatever. So people that know it, love it and know it. But Comedy Central has this more ubiquitous sort of thing, right? So sometimes that'll still be in my bio or I'll use it. But it's like, Comedy Central Fresh Faces 2005 or 6. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, how long is that face going to stay fresh? You know what I mean?
It's in the crisper. I forgot about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was Comedy Central's Fresh Faces during the second Reagan administration. Like, I don't care, but I just like to, I think people that are listening to this podcast will find that interesting.
Right.
You know what I mean? But also, who gives a fuck, guys? If that helps you be able to get on stage and you know you're going to do a good job and you're doing something interesting. Sure. It's okay.
Well, you know? You're great on if people see Redacted tonight, then you can see the clips online, of course, too. And it fits you so well. And it's basically stand-up, right? It's like what Lewis Black did on The Daily Show. You know, you'd have your segment and explain the world to us. I thought it was fantastic. Did you feel that...
On The Daily Show or on SNL?
No, I mean Daily Show. Oh, but
okay. Yeah, Lewis Black would do his Back in Black segment.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking Colin Quinn. I don't know why I mixed those guys up. Okay, continue.
No, he would like, they pick one topic and go at it. Did that satiate you that you wouldn't have to do stand-up, or would you also want to do stand-up? Or did you worry like, oh, I'm not sticking with the plan?
Well, I would still do stand-up, you know, just not as much. I would still perform definitely at least on a weekly basis, sometimes more. But I guess I wasn't... I was still generating some material, but maybe not as much. But I did record that. I did end up recording that special, and that was, you know, a couple years into me doing the job. But that was a combination of stuff I had written since starting the show and stand up from before. So that was like a few years of stuff together.
What did Redacted Tonight mean to you? Because to me, like, that was you being a professional comic and also in the genre that you like to speak about and like to stay informed in. So I would think that was a very big deal.
It was huge for me. I mean, it's something that I'm incredibly proud to have gotten to be a part of. And it was great to kind of jump into the fray and really be fully engaged in all of this political content and figuring out how to create comedy and satire out of it. And also, there was a real sense of it feeling kind of like there's somewhat of an importance or like a mission behind it, because our niche was to find these stories that aren't being covered as much and highlighting them for people who are really interested in sort of an anti-corporate, moving past the two-party system, more equitable sort of world, anti-war sort of thing. So it felt like...
Does this make money? Like, is that a full-time living?
Yeah, it was. And making a full-time living as a comic was great. Yeah, I was making good money, you know?
Was that... good, bad, or indifferent to your mania, the show? I wouldn't say conspiracy theories, but it does look into how we're being tricked. Did that fuck you up?
I think so. I think I would get sort of like, you know, kind of like angry or annoyed at certain stories or depressed at times. But then I think I was in a good groove with it. But then there'd be a couple of stories that I think ultimately, certainly, I don't know if it triggered mania, but it certainly didn't help, because there were a few that were like these sort of really fucked up things that were happening. And then I was shocked that when we would talk about them and people would watch it, that nothing would happen. There'd be like no repercussions for anybody.
You're on the forums like, guys, did you go and do stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm looking outside. You're not doing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You're also the creator of 50 First Jokes.
Yeah.
It's on its 15th year. It's in multiple cities. It's the start of every new year. Comedians go up and they tell a very first joke they came up with in the new year. Does anybody ever try to cheat? Like, come on. I know that was a joke you had.
It's going to be the 14th year. Sorry to be a stickler. Okay.
I think positive.
Yeah. You know what? The New York co-producer, Sachi Ezra, who's amazing, and she's been doing the show now for like over 10 years, maybe like 11 or something
Which, by the way, you got to go out and say, man, and I don't even think I need to promote this for you because it sells out anyway. It has a huge lineup of people who are either like you recognize or you're about to recognize. And
if you don't like them, they're done in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
And it's one of these shows that you could see the camaraderie between the comedians. You can, a lot of them in New York, at least, they're on stage while they're peers are on, because it's such a quick turnaround. So you could see their responses to their peers' jokes, and you could see like who's liked more, who's not so much liked.
Yeah, it's funny.
It's such a good show, not even for the gossip aspect of it. Just you really get to see the process, and it's hilarious. It's so good.
Thanks. Yeah, it's so fun. I'm so glad to get to host that and be a part of it. Yeah, it is. It is fun, and I think sometimes, because basically half of the first group is on stage. Like 25 comics are on stage before the show starts, and then the host goes up and does some time, and then brings everybody up, and they do their set, and then go back to their seat and don't leave until it. So everybody is up there. Sometimes though, if comics aren't responding to other comics, it's not because they have like issue with them. It's because they're so in their head about their bit. So there is that element sometimes where like this brilliant photographer, Mindy Tucker, who's been kind of cataloging the New York comedy scene for well over a decade.
It's just like people who are new to the scene, they think like once they get a Mindy, that's sort of like, okay, I moved one more step in the comedy community.
I got a Mindy.
Yeah. I mean, people post and they're like, yep, it's a Mindy. People go to parties when they know that she's going to be the photographer.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And then Mindy just says, because she's very polite, and she just says hi, and they go, who, me? Okay, and they pose. She's like, oh, holy, I was just getting shrimp. Shit.
Yeah, yeah. A Mindy. That almost sounds like a thing.
Yeah. You know what it I mean? Is,
a
yeah.
Grammy, a Mindy, mm-hmm. an Emmy. I got a Mindy.
Are you able to look back at all these different things and be proud of yourself?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right now that you guys bring it up.
Yeah. You've done a lot, and I don't know if you recognize it.
Yeah, I think I am, right? I'm just, I'll be honest. I'm at a weird time, though, right? Because I was doing Redacted, and yes, I would have continued to do it longer. Eventually, I would have wanted to not necessarily do it for forever, but I just have to be honest. I left the show because I got sick. I left before I would have left, right? So that's something that is potentially, I'm trying to stay positive about that, and I think that I am, but it hurts. You know, it kind of hurts.
Right, but we alluded.
You got it yoinked a little.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, and then I've come back to New York, and I'm so glad to connect with people and figure things out. But I'm like trying to wrap my head around the scene. I don't want to be like entitled or egotistical in any way, but I also want to work hard and move forward and figure out what to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult.
What advice?
That's what's going on?
What advice?
Wait, you know what? I want to go back to the question because I cut you off. Does anyone fake their first joke? Do you know?
Oh, I'm sorry that we didn't get into that. Yes. Okay. So Saatchi always keeps track of this because she's really got her finger on the pulse and has seen most of these performers, and she does an amazing job booking it, especially since I've, she's always done an amazing job booking, but I'm going to say, especially since I've been in DC and coming back. It's been the first time in the past couple of years where I don't know all the comics that are on. It used to always be like, oh, these are all my comics.
It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. I really thought comedy would have just stopped while I went out of town for 5 years, but no. I was like, all right, Keith and the girl keep doing podcasts. I mean, they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. You know what I mean? But besides that.
Right. It's like the Avengers. Some people lived those 5 years and some people didn't.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. I'll pretend I know what you mean.
It sounds like a popular thing. Sure.
Yeah. Let's go with that.
End of the world. Yeah, yeah.
I know Keith uses MoviePass a lot. I heard that. I heard that someplace. So every once in a while, you'll hear, maybe it's like one or two a year, some years maybe none, but that someone will do material that they've done because I think they get shook. They get nervous because there's 400 people in there watching the show. I mean, the audience, though, is incredibly warm. They know what's going on. They know that it's new stuff, but there's this weird pressure. And then there's also, but Saatchi notices that, and then I think she's pretty reticent to then have them back if they do that.
Right. You know? Yeah, you know, I've seen it. Paul Provenza has a show called Comedy Without a Net, and they put, they it's usually nonsensical, like not even real words, on a screen, and the comic has to riff off them. But you could tell sometimes the comic's like, crazy, like a craziness. It's like craziness. Things are crazy. You have a crazy dinner with your family and you're, and they just go into this bit.
They go
and
it's into like, it. Come yeah. On. It's like, come on, do the spirit of
do the
show.
Game, right.
You know? But then there's one other element of the show, like, And it is such a fun thing. And it's, I'm pretty sure it's at the Bell House Friday, January 3rd. So anybody wants to go should go. It's a good, it's a really great time. And
that's the New York one.
Yeah, that's the New York one. And what's cool is like friends of mine in all of these different scenes around the country in about 10 cities, like put on a version of it, put on 50 First Jokes too. So it's really cool. And I have to double back. I was supposed to get some sort of something from that, I let it go like years ago, but now I gotta be like, hey, remember that deal we made that I stopped giving a fuck about for a while?
I still give a fuck.
Yeah, give a fuck again. Hey, cool.
Hope you've been saving.
Hope you've been saving. Yeah,
everybody's gotta pay their taxes.
Yeah. But there is one thing I think why people get nervous too, and it's so silly. It's like, I think that a lot of people on the industry side of it will come out to that,
right?
You know what I mean? And so comics that are like hopeful of getting some of that shit will, you know, get kind of like nervous compared to back in the day. It used to just be this like ridiculous party. I mean, the first year of it was in the back room of the Parkside Lounge in the Lower East Side. And we all just got shit faced and hooked up with each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's simpler times.
Now it's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's totally a thing.
Does everybody remind the industry like, and da, 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 da. Now, again, I never told anybody that joke. This is the first time. Thank you very much. You
know, no, that's, I mean, I think it's just in the back of some people's minds.
Yeah.
And other people don't care.
It doesn't matter because you still get your Mindy.
Yeah, right. Everybody gets their Mindy, which is really cool.
I remember reading my autobiography, The Great American Novel, and Jesse Joyce wanted to see it. They accidentally sent a copy before it was done, and I said, no, I have to make some edits first. But anyway, I do have this non-edited, the way I would like it, book. And Jesse said, I'd want to read it. And I'm like, no, it's not ready yet. And he almost begged, where he's like, no, please, I want to read it. I'm going to understand if things are spelled wrong that you're not an idiot. To this day, he can't get that out of his head that he thinks I put the book out unedited. So I can see a comic being nervous, like, do they understand it's the 51st jokes? Like, of course they do. Do they, though? And do they know? You know what I mean? He thinks I'm a terrible author now.
Why does he? Come on.
Yeah.
He must know better.
I don't think he does.
Well, you guys just had him on recently, right?
Yeah, but now it's weird to ask him. It's been 10 years.
Well, clearly it's been sticking in your head. Just like when I listened to, just like me with the cereal from fucking 10 years ago. Jesus Christ. Okay. I didn't tell this. It's funny. Yeah. So, cause I love you guys, whatever. So I was like, I've been listening to the, what's it called? The behind, what is it?
Last week on Keith and the Girl, which is the wrap up show that Bianca Brady hosts.
It's so fucking good, by the way.
Thanks.
And she's fucking hilarious.
She's amazing.
Yeah. Does she do stand up?
She's going to be doing stand up for Keith's,
she fucking should.
Annual show, but it's going to be like the first time.
Well, she's really funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I was listening to some of those because I pay for the VIP thing. I think I bought it while I was manic, but I want to still support you guys. So I feel, we'll see what happens next year. Not because I don't want to support you guys, but just, you know what I mean?
Those we have the silver deal, the gold deal, and the manic deal.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
yeah.
just to trick people that are going fucking crazy.
Well, listen, I'm just going to pay you in JFUD coins. So whatever that translates into, you guys can have it.
That's fair.
But yeah, so I was listening to that and I was like, oh, we had so much fun on the show. I wonder what they're going to say. And then Keith's like, yeah, he fucking came over and he just ate the cereal and wouldn't leave. I was like, oh my God, Keith's been harboring that for 10 fucking years.
I ran into him the other day. I go, oh, I totally forgot about it. He's like, you're the one who said it. 10 years ago, he was in our studio and we recorded upstairs. We say goodbye. I come downstairs. He's eating a bowl of cereal. And then I go, oh, okay, well, you finished your bowl of cereal. Now take care. He goes, but pizza's coming.
Did I order it?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Thank you. But we
I feel
were
like I didn't order. I feel like somebody said, oh, we're going to have pizza or something.
I don't know. But you know, Keith doesn't go out. So whatever stories of that year is going to be that year's right. story. And yeah. you're the one for that one.
Right.
Well, can we move past it?
It's hard. Can you just leave? by the way, speaking of the Keith and the Girl premium package or VIP program, John F. O'Donnell will be doing a podcast on there. He's going to be doing it every week for a month and see how he digs it. I'm very excited.
I'm so excited and so appreciative. Thank
Even the title is fantastic.
Yeah.
What's the title?
It's called Take Your Pills, Psychopath.
Yeah, you're right.
With John F. O'Donnell.
It's fantastic. I'm in. What I was going to ask, what advice would John like to give a young John F. O'Donnell specifically? What do you wish you, no matter how petty or small, what do you wish you knew when you were young?
Okay. I would say, in terms of comedy, like, hey, don't try to, you know, do everything or be a part of everything that's going on. Don't worry about what other people are doing. Just figure out what makes you funny and what's important to you, and you know, cultivate that, and cultivate, try to cultivate a sense of community around that, and, you know, care about putting together a body of work and being around people that are great people. And if, you know, if somebody's shitty, who cares what sort of clout they have? Don't even waste your time.
That's such good advice, because I hear people going like, I can't believe so-and-so got that job, got that gig. And I'm like, that's not even in your realm of body of work that you're working on. It has nothing to do with anything that you've been striving for, but you feel like you're missing out constantly. So I think that's good advice in general. Like, keep your eyes on your own page and just go forward with anything that's bringing you joy, and then the community will form around that.
Yeah, and life advice, maybe you shouldn't...
Take your meds, psychopath.
Yeah, exactly. maybe because of a predilection towards mood disorders in your family, you shouldn't have done acid so many times when you were 17, even though you didn't know about the mood disorder stuff. And a lot of your friends did way more than you, and they're just fucking fine. So whatever the fuck that is.
Try not to think about it.
Yeah. Also, we don't know if it's a correlation A to B, but I could not have helped.
But the chair turned into a dragon, so maybe.
Yeah. So maybe. Oh, God, I wish that was all that it was.
Well, I heard that it if you wait until after you're 25 to do something like acid, it bypasses that. But also, if you have that genetic gene, you're going to have bipolar. You have it. It's just the acid might kick it in a little faster.
Maybe. It's hard to know. You might be right.
But, it is hard to know because it's illegal. They're not doing enough to know about that stuff, which I think is the most dangerous part of making these drugs illegal.
Well, we never really know, but at the same time, it's not carrots.
Yeah, but apparently you can still get it in suburban New Jersey in the late 90s.
I'll tell you that. Apparently, between 4 and 9 p.m.
Well, that $7 acid trip really lasted a long time.
Yeah. So I would say that, and then I would say you should have gone on lithium 10 or so years ago, maybe 15. But... honestly, this is fucked up, and I'll talk about this in the podcast, among other things. I don't just want to talk about like my shit. I really want to try to create a sense of community, talk about different things people are going through. But you know what? I wasn't even prescribed or offered as an option lithium until 2014. Wow. And I was diagnosed in 2000.
Wow.
Because for a long time, they decided to marginalize that medication and push these other ones, like these different mood stabilizers or atypical antipsychotics that now they've come around and say don't work as well as lithium. And it's so fucked up.
Well, because they know so little, I think you guys are actually the lab rats for this.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
Yeah, because we just started admitting even like that people have bipolar.
Let's see if I can trigger you. Ready? Rastafari.
Whatever. No big deal.
Well, you're doing great then.
He's so excited about your triggers, right?
Yeah. But isn't it funny, right? So the first time I did stand up was in Jamaica, and I won the contest. And one of my recurring delusions all these years later has to do, there's some weird, some weird thing there.
You could have won a contest in a weirder place, though. It could have been worse.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah. This is good.
Well, there you have it, man. It's always fun talking to you. I love you.
Make sure you check him out online. Where can they find you on social media?
Oh, yeah. If anybody wants to get my stand-up special, The Manic Depressive Chocolate Fountain Operator, I'm going to give you guys a promo code to get it for free. You can go to jfodcomedyspecial.com and then...
You hate making money.
Well, you know what? Well,
he's going to ask for it 10 years later.
Yeah.
But right now, he wants you to just have it.
You know why, though? Because everybody's streaming. It's too complicated. It's fine. So basically... people don't like to buy specials anymore. They can just listen to everything on Spotify. You know? Anyway.
So what do people do?
Anyway, sorry. That was weird.
How can I have this?
Yeah. So at promo, guys.
Imagine you walk into a real store and this is how the clerk talks. I'm like, so I can have it or not have it?
I just want people to listen to it because it came out so good, but it's like on Vimeo. Okay. JFODcomedyspecials.com. Promo code capital JFOD lowercase special. So it's JFOD special. Okay. And then I'm at the real JFOD on social media.
There you have it. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Spread the word. This is my opening line, and we'll talk to you soon. And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com. Mmm.